If you have a wife and you're out and about without her, and you meet someone that you both know, there's a good chance that sometime in your life, or good chance that it will happen in your life, that you'll be asked, "So, where's your better half?" Now, I have to admit, I have never heard of a woman being asked this about her husband, where the wife is asked, "So, where is your better half?" And the only thing I can find about the explanation for this is there really isn't anything written down about it. It just seems to be self-apparent is why. You know, let's be honest. For those of us that are married, there are times, maybe a lot of times, our wives have either steered us away from trouble with their sound advice, or if we had already started going down that path, they have helped us reverse course by simply giving a look. Maybe a look with a raised eyebrow. Or maybe there are times that there was a swift kick under the table to alert you that maybe it's time to change the conversation. And there, today we are going to look at how one woman out of the Old Testament, how her courage and wisdom actually ended up rescuing two men in the Bible. One was her husband, who was evil, awful man to be married to. And the other one was the future king of Israel, a man that would be known as one that that was after God's own heart. So today I'm going to read through the narrative of Abigail, and you'll find this narrative in 1 Samuel chapter 25. We'll read most of the chapter, not all of it, but almost all of it. This chapter, as we lead up to it, the prophet Samuel had already anointed King Saul, the first king of Israel. But Saul was disobedient, so God had told Samuel that he was going to take the kingdom away from him. And later on, he had Samuel anoint this teenage kid named David. Now, David was a faithful servant, a musician who played for Saul, was a great friend of Saul's son. But Saul's anger and jealousy continued to get the best of him about David, because that he was well liked by others, and when he had a victory, Israel praised him, and Saul just couldn't take it. And eventually, David had to flee for his life. He gathered 400 misfits who became mighty men of war. Eventually, he went up to 600, and they fled into the wilderness to get away from Saul. So let's begin now with 1 Samuel chapter 25. And it begins with Samuel's death. And it says this: "Now Samuel died, and all Israel assembled and mourned for him, and they buried him at the house of Ramah." Israel, this was a devastating blow to Israel, because he was the prophet of all the prophets there. He was the main guy. Was a friend of Saul's, became estranged from Saul, was a mentor to David. So while the nation mourned, David would have felt this more keenly. And it goes on and it says, "Then David rose and went to the wilderness of Paran." Wilderness of Paran, lower part of Israel, desert. Very little to live on there. "And there was a man in Maon, whose business was in Carmel. The man was very rich. He had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats. He was shearing his sheep in Carmel. Now the name of this man was Nabal, and the name of his wife Abigail. The woman was discerning and beautiful, but the man was harsh and badly behaved. He was a Calebite." So here we now are introduced to Nabal and Abigail. Nabal's name means just foolishness, means belligerent. He was stingy, even though he was wealthy. He was a powerful man. He had great wealth. His wife, on the other hand, was stated to be beautiful, and it means completely beautiful. Face, figure, she's just a beauty to behold. But not only that, she was discerning, she was wise. Clearly, Abigail drew the short end of the stick in this marriage. And sometimes we think, well, how did they end up together? Was it just opposites attracting? Well, no, because in that time, marriages were arranged. So this would have been arranged. And Abigail's parents probably thought, this is a great match because this man is wealthy. He is powerful. She'll be set for life. So they married her off to Nabal. Verse 4. David heard in the wilderness that Nabal was shearing his sheep. And so David sent 10 young men. And David said to the young men, go up to Carmel and go to Nabal and greet him in my name. Now, again, we see some information here that's repeated. David's in the wilderness. He's in the desert. Nabal is in Carmel, which literally means vineyard land. Basically, an area that we'd call kind of a garden spot. Showing really how differently these two men are living at this time. And so we also see, again, that he is shearing his sheep. And so he instructs his servants to go to him because sheep shearing usually puts people in a good mood because that means money is coming in. That's harvest time for wool. It would be a time of festival, too. People would gather and they would rejoice about the harvest of wool or grain or fruit or whatever. There was a time when people would just gather and celebrate what has been provided. So Nabal should be in a great mood because he is watching his prophets climb. So David sends his young officers to go to him and instructs them to be courteous and respectful, showing a concern for Nabal and his well-being. And here are the instructions that David gave them. And thus you shall greet him. Peace, shalom. Peace be to you and peace to your house and peace to all that you have. I hear that you have shears. Now your shepherds have been with us and we did them no harm. And they missed nothing all the time they were in Carmel. Ask your young men, and they will tell you. Therefore, let my young men find favor in your eyes, for we come on a feast day. Please give whatever you have at hand to your servants and to your son, David. Now, these officers came and they expressed exactly what David wanted in a very respectful way. But they're also very upfront. David says, I know that you're shearing your sheep. I've heard this. And everybody knows what that means. That means money's coming. And then he tells them, you know, my army has been around your shepherds and your flock. But we didn't take any of your sheep. You know, in the ancient times when armies traveled through land, and not even that ancient times, even into modern times, there are times that the soldiers would take animals and food to live on. It was a common practice. So the 600 men could have taken some, but they did not. David said not to take any. Not only did they not take anything, they made sure no one or nothing else took any either, man nor beast. They protected the sheep. They protected the shepherds. So basically, David is saying, our men, my army and I, have made it possible for you to have this bumper crop of wool because you're not missing anything. And now we would just like you to consider maybe a tip for that, if you will, an honorarium. We've provided a service. Would you just be whatever you got, whatever you think is fair? Would you consider giving some food to my men? The answer wasn't exactly what they expected. Look at verse 9. When David's young men came, they said all this to Nabal in the name of David, and then they waited. So Nabal's just kind of staring them down, thinking, So he's delaying the answer. Not going to respond very quickly. And then he answers. And Nabal answered David's servants, "So who is David? Who is the son of Jesse?" Now you might be thinking, well, maybe he's never heard of David. No, I'm going to tell you why in just a minute. He knows who David is. He basically is saying that he is insignificant. He's speaking from his point of power and privilege and basically saying, you know, really, David, in your army, you're really nothing to me. The next statement, we know why he is familiar with David. And he says this, you know, there are many servants these days who are breaking away from their masters. Remember, David was a faithful servant of King Saul. And now he's on the run. So King Saul has been chasing David. People know. And Nabal clearly is siding with Saul. Oh yeah, that David, unfaithful. And he goes on. Shall I take my bread and my water and my meat that I have killed from my shears and give it to men who come from, where'd you say you're from again? I don't even know where you're from. His answer is harsh, unkind. Not even speaking from the wealth that he has. He just sees this unfaithful, these representatives of an unfaithful servant to the king. He had no intention of giving them anything. If we could sum up his response in two words, it would be, get lost. Verse 12, so David's young men turned away and came back and told him all of this. And David said to his men, every man strap on his sword. And every man of them strapped on his sword. David also strapped on his sword. And about 400 men went up after David, while 200 remained with the baggage. So the men returned, told David everything, and David's temper blew. He blew a gasket. And now he is acting rashly. Now, there are times that we need to act quickly, but he's acting rashly. He's kind of out of control with his temper. Anytime that we act rashly, we're not acting on God's behalf. We're just acting on our behalf. David's pride has been hurt, and he is out for vengeance. And he orders his men to put on their swords, and he puts on the sword because this time he's going with them. And he decides he doesn't need all 400. He leaves 200 with the baggage, which I just find curious that they mention that. Because I'm thinking that years later, these 200 soldiers are talking to their grandchildren, and the grandchildren said, well, Grandpa, at the Battle of Nabal, what did you do? Well, son, I was at the Battle of Samsonite. Those bags were safe with me. It's just a pure pride response. Meanwhile, back in Carmel, but one of the young men, not David's young men, but the servant of Nabal, one of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, behold, David sent messengers out of the wilderness to greet our master, and he railed at them. Yeah, that's no surprise. That's not shocking. Yet the men were very good to us, and we suffered no harm, and we did not miss anything when we were in the fields as long as we were with them. And they were a wall to us both by day and night, all the while we were with them keeping the sheep. So he's backing up exactly what those men from David said. Now therefore know this and consider what you should do, for harm is determined against our master and against all of his house. How does he know that? Well, he knows those guys. He just said he's been hanging out with them, that they were protecting him. And what did he see as they were listening to Nabal rebuke them? He saw their faces grow red. They probably started taking deep breaths to keep under control. And their eyes started to get, you know, started to tighten as they are just looking at Nabal. This is going to be bad news when we report this. And they turned and went off probably in a rage. And this servant's going, oh, bad news. Because they're going to come back. And then, an amazing statement, I think, when you consider this is a servant talking to the master's wife. And he says, and he, talking about Nabal, such a worthless man that one cannot even speak to him. That's pretty brave. Or, she provides such a safe presence that even a servant can speak and share what his concern is and then to share what he thinks. I think it's her presence. That she's just a safe person. So now, Abigail's got to do something. What was her response? Well, it could have been, you know, God works in mysterious ways, doesn't he? May my husband's death be short and painless, quick and painless. She could have been doing that. I've been wanting out of this marriage, and David is going to provide a way out. But she's not like that. She's a good wife. More than that, she's a good person. And a good person is always concerned about the well-being of another person, even when that person is terrible, cruel. A good person will always have the best interest of that person at heart, no matter who that person is. So look what she does. Abigail made haste. Now, we've already seen two sinful responses. Nabal, harsh. David, rash. But Abigail is quick, decisive. She's acting within the parameters of God's will because we see that it's a thought-out haste. It's not rash. Look what she does. And then Abigail made haste and took 200 loaves and 2 skins of wine and 5 sheep already prepared and 5 seeds of parched grain and 100 clusters of raisins and 200 cakes of figs and laid them on the donkeys. Remember, they're getting ready for a big feast. So this food was just around. So she's taking part of the food and getting it ready for David. And not just any food, but some of the best food. Food that's already been prepared. Dessert. You know, not just the main course. She's making sure they're going to get desserts. And she said to her young men, go on before me. Behold, I'll come after you. But she did not tell her husband Nabal. You don't have to tell your spouse everything. There are times just for their good, don't say anything. because certainly he would have tried to mess things up. And then it says in verse 20, and as she rode on a donkey and came down under cover of the mountain, behold, David and his men came down toward her, and she met them. So here's David, 401 people. David and his 400 men armed with swords coming around one part of the mountain. Here she's coming with donkeys, with food, and she's coming around the other side of the mountain, and they meet each other. On the one side, you have David's mighty men armed for battle. On the other side, you have Abigail and a crock pot. And behind her, donkeys full of food. Basically, the ancient version of Food Truck Tuesdays. And she's pretty wise. Because how do you divert a bunch of hungry, angry men? Yeah, they were hangry, weren't they? So she had food there. You know, guys, you're just not yourself. Have a Snickers, right? But David, he's looking at his men. They're probably going, well, you know, there's no hurry. But he wanted to make sure that his intentions were known. Now David had said, surely in vain have I guarded all that this fellow has in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed of all that belonged to him, and he has returned me evil for good. God do so much to the enemies of David and more also, if by morning I leave so much as one male of all who belong to him. He was going to kill everybody. Every man in that place, servants, sons, he didn't care. Visiting uncle, they're all going to be killed. He's going to completely destroy the power and wealth and the life of Nabal. This woman was courageous. She's standing before David, and David's still angry, and she's not backing down. She was courageous in the very fact that she knows she's got an angry man in front of her. She's got an angry man at home. But she held her ground. And she responds this way. When Abigail saw David, she hurried and got down from the donkey and fell before David on her face and bowed to the ground. She fell at his feet and said, on me alone, my Lord, be the guilt. Don't blame him, blame me. She's shown reverence that Nabal didn't show, and now she's pleading, don't blame him. On me alone, my Lord, be guilt. Please let your servant speak in your ears and hear the words of her heart. So she's asking that she could talk. Let my Lord regard this worthless fellow Nabal. For as his name is, so he is. Nabal is his name, and folly is with him. Now she's just sharing what everybody knows. She's not trying to cover up truth. She says, you know, Nabal, that's what they call him. Means belligerent, foolish. Now, I'm sure his parents, when they named him, you know, that he was born, they went, oh, let's call him Nabal. This is probably what everybody else called him. The servants, the people who work with him, his wife, his third cousin twice removed, they all probably called him this. And she agrees that it is a pretty fitting name. And she's discerning enough to know that he has lived up to that name. A few weeks ago, I was at a sandwich shop. A friend and I went there. We got in line. There's a few people ahead of us. Some people were already, man and his wife were already waiting for their food. And so we ordered. We got a coffee. He got a lemonade, got a couple biscuits. He went out, it was at Fells Point, he went out and sat at a table, got there, and I went to look, and I came back, and the couple of people who were right ahead of us, they got their stuff, they were going out. The man and woman were still there waiting, and I'm looking, and I went, oh, coffee and lemonade. So I went over and opened up the coffee lid to pour cream in it, and this man started screaming at me, "That is my coffee! That's my coffee!" And I turned around and I just turned like this. I went, "Oh, I'm really sorry. I ordered the same thing." He says, "Get back. Physical, social distancing, social distancing. Cooties." Okay, he didn't do the cooties. But he's like, "Social distancing." He said, "What's wrong with you?" I said, "I'm really sorry." He says, you're touching people's drinks." I said, thought it was mine. "And you're not distancing." I'm just trying to make things okay. It's just an honest mistake. And he's ranting and he's raving and he's getting new lids and he's, "Oh, I can't believe it." So he gets his new lids and he gets his drinks and he turns around to me and he goes, "Let me just tell you how irritated I am with you." He says, you're touching my drinks. He says, "And you're not social distancing." And I'll be honest, this is where my temper kicked in. And I said, "Excuse me. I already apologized. I heard this lecture already. I don't want to hear it again." And I was really boiling. And he backed down. And so he gets his drinks and he walks away. And I am, I know my ears are red. I'm just sitting there. And his wife comes over to me and she goes, "I'm really sorry." And then she just apologized a little bit more. You know what I realized? She does a lot of apologizing. This is something that happens a lot. She was married to Nabal. And it goes on, and she says, "Now then, my Lord, as the Lord lives, and as your soul lives, because the Lord has restrained you from your blood guilt and from saving with your own hand, now let your enemies and those who seek to do evil to my Lord be as Nabal. And now let this present that your servant has brought to my Lord be given to the young men who follow my Lord. Please forgive the trespasses of your servant, for the Lord will certainly make my Lord a sure house, because my Lord is fighting the battles of the Lord. And evil shall not be found in you so long as you live. If men rise up to pursue you and seek your life, the life of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of the living in the care of the Lord your God, and the lives of your enemies he shall sling out as far as from the hollow of a sling. And when the Lord has done to my Lord according to all the good that he has spoken concerning you and has appointed you prince over Israel," she knows who he is. That's why we know Nabal knew who he was. But she understood that he was going to be the future king of Israel. "My Lord shall have no cause of grief or pangs of conscience of having shed blood without cause or for my Lord working salvation for himself." Basically, she is saying is, "Listen, I know you're going to be king one day, and do you want this on your conscience? A battle that you didn't have to fight? Blood you didn't have to shed? Do you want to live with that? Do you want that to be a mark against you? Oh, don't do it. You're taking measures in your own hands. Just trust God." How wise is she? She was able to look down the road, years down the road, because we think David was in the wilderness from at least 10 to 15 years, basically learning how to be a king. And she was able to help him see the moment that he's king and what are the regrets that he's going to have if he follows through on this. Don't let this rash act lead to a lifelong grief. And when the Lord has dealt well with my Lord, then remember your servant. Remember me. Well, he saw the wisdom of her words and he heeded them. And he responded in verse 32, "Blessed be the Lord, the God of Israel, who sent you this day to meet me. Blessed be your discretion and blessed be you. You have kept me this day from blood guilt and from working salvation with my own hand. For surely as the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, who has restrained me from hurting you unless you had hurried and come to meet me, truly by morning there would have not been left in Nabal so much as one male." When he's talking about hurting her, she would have been destitute if he had followed through. Then David received from her hand what she had brought him. And he said to her, "Go in peace to your house. See, I have obeyed your voice, and I have granted your petition." David basically was saying, "Phew, dodge that. That would have been a disaster." And Abigail came to Nabal, and behold, he was holding a feast in his house, like the feast of a king, rich, powerful. And Nabal's heart was merry within him, for he was very drunk. So she told him nothing at all until the morning light. In the morning, when the wine had gone out of Nabal, his wife told him these things, and his heart died within him, and he became a stone. And then about 10 days later, the Lord struck Nabal, and he died. As she's telling him, he is getting angry. And he couldn't probably believe what he was hearing. And he had a heart attack. And then he died. God took care of Nabal. David didn't have to do it. After this, and we won't read those verses, David praises God for what he had done, and then he actually also marries Abigail. Sometimes courage takes many forms. And I hope for you ladies here today, there are times that it is your courage that we need to see you exercise. It is your wisdom and your voice that we need to hear. Because we live in tumultuous times. And there are times that these words of these forms of courage and wisdom takes a variety of forms. Dealing with an angry and abusive person. Or maybe trying to keep a good person from doing wrong. We're going down a path that's destructive. Maybe it's giving space to someone who vents. There are just times that it is the insight from a woman or seeing her courage, steadfast courage, that inspires. But we will say we are all equal. It doesn't mean we're the same. And there are times that we just desperately need women to show that courage and wisdom. That doesn't let the men off the hook. It's just sometimes we have good courage, but maybe sometimes our wisdom lags a little bit behind. But we all need to show these qualities and how we respond to those around us. I'm going to ask the praise team to make their way up. And as they're coming up, I'd just like for you to bow your head and just close your eyes for just a few moments, just in silence. And I want you just to think and just ask God to kind of bring to mind women, whether in the past or present, who show courage and wisdom. And they have spoken into your life, or maybe they had confronted you, or they were courageous to point something out that has helped you to be a better person, to be more like the woman or man of God that God desires you to be. And maybe a person will come to mind that is surprising to you. I just want you to just think about those people and thank God for those people and how they minister to you, just in silence for just a few seconds. All right, let's stand and We'll sing a song, and I just want you to think as we're standing, who's like the servant? Who's the person who's scared that's in your life that you need to really give some space for? Who's the neighbor that you need to go and kind of confront and try to keep them from doing wrong? Who's the David who's a good guy, but boy, maybe you're getting off a little bit and you just need to encourage him? Because in that one meeting with David, she really rescued two men. David from doing something really foolish and covering up and taking the blame for her wicked husband Nabal and having him being murdered by David. So who are these people in your life? Let's sing.